Good morning. If you have your Bibles, turn with me, if you would, over to the Gospel of Mark, to the very first chapter. I'm going to pick up and begin in verse 23 and just read down through verse 28. Mark chapter 1, beginning in verse 23. It reads, "Now there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, 'Let us alone. What have we to do with you, Jesus of Nazareth? Did you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God.' But Jesus rebuked him, saying, 'Be quiet and come out of him.' And when the unclean spirit had convulsed him and cried out with a loud voice, he came out of him. Then they were all amazed, so that they questioned among themselves, saying, 'What is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority he commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him.' And immediately his fame spread throughout all the region around Galilee." They say there is at least one similarity between mice and men. Neither of us want to die. Self-preservation. And I guess if you think about it, clearly self-preservation is probably one of the strongest instincts in all living creatures. I was only about 7 years old when Disney had a documentary called White Wilderness, talking about back in 1958. And if you were lucky enough to have a television in the 1950s, then you probably watched Disney, because it began televising in 1954. And especially if you were a young person, you wanted to watch the Mickey Mouse Club as it developed over the years. But if you're an older folk like me, you might remember watching Disney's, I think they called it the True Adventure series. And maybe not Disney, you watched the Mutual of Omaha, the Wild Kingdom. And there were other television programs that had to do with animals. Well, this White Christmas Disney program was about animal life in the North American Arctic, and it became famous much later because it propagated a big lie. It claimed that in the Scandinavian mountains, there lives a little small mouse-like creature that every few years commits mass suicide. The creatures are called lemmings, L-E-M-M-I-N-G-S. And it's small. It's kind of a stocky little rodent, has short legs, has a very short tail, has very long, very dense, very soft a fur that is usually brown or black or some combination of the two, has little bitty eyes, and though it has ears, you can't see them because they're covered up by the fur. Cute little thing. So the TV program said that when their population has grown too large and the food supply has become too scarce, that they leave their barrels like a mighty army, and they swarm out of the mountains and they rush down towards the sea. And normally lemmings would fear water, but during this mass march, they would cross perhaps many streams and even lakes. And they ate grass and devoured everything en route as they headed towards the sea. So the program showed them running seemingly for weeks, and then the lemmings finally reached the seashore, and row after row, they plunge off a cliff into the sea. Well, for a short time, I guess they float, try to swim, but soon the creatures tire, and one by one they sink to their death. Now that's pretty dramatic for a kid to watch. But it is kind of cool. 34 years later, in 1982, CBS Television had a program called The Fifth Estate, And one of their programs had to do with animal cruelty in Hollywood. And they discovered that this lemming scene that had been shown before by Disney was actually filmed at a place called the Bow River near Canmore, Alberta. And Canmore, Alberta is west of Calgary, about 43 miles north of the United States border, and it's about 1,600 miles away from the Arctic Ocean. And CBS found as they did their research that the lemmings were actually transported to this Canmore. They were put on turntables and kind of jostled and then repeatedly shoved off the cliff so it would imply a mass suicide. And they also said the particular species of lemmings that had been used for this scene in the TV program was one that did not migrate at all. So after you watch that White Wilderness episode, repeated for three decades, I'm sure, you're in around wondering what would get into lemmings that would cause them to go commit mass suicide. People believed it. People still believe it. In fact, I picked up the paper this morning and there was an article in the paper that was talking about Devin Nunes, who was the former House representative and is now the CEO of Trump's social media company called Truth Social. And in it, it cites occasions back when he was a representative and having to fight against what he said was the far right Freedom Caucus, and he called them lemmings with suicide vests. So now that we know that what Disney put on about lemmings committing suicide was all a lie, it made me wonder what gets into people to think that creating such a hoax is okay. They say that the behavior of animals is relatively predictable. More predictable, they say, than the behavior of humans. For example, will a dog bite the hand that feeds it? Very, very rarely. Mark Twain said that's the difference between dogs and humans. I guess he's implying we have no problem biting the hand that feeds us. Strange things do happen in the animal kingdom. Let me give you an example. There was a census worker who approached a house in her territory very slowly. There was a fence around the whole house, and she greatly feared dogs. So she opened the gate and very quietly made her way stealthily up to the house, and she rang the doorbell, and she breathed a sigh of relief when the lady of the house opened the door. She felt she was safe now until the lady jumped out and bit her. Required medical attention for a human bite. And it makes you wonder, what gets into people? Think about that. What gets into people who are constantly and viciously biting those that are around them? If not literally, surely, emotionally. What gets into people who one minute hug their children or their spouse and the next minute they're turning them aside? What gets into people that experiment with dangerous drugs or alcohol and run around with the wrong crowd? What gets into people that can twist up their lives in the knots that seemingly you can't undo? What gets into people that cause us to make all the wrong choices that we make in life? What gets into people that they cast God and Christ and the work of the kingdom in and out of their lives like just it's a passing whim? How do you explain it? What gets into people? Some people say, well, the devil made me do it. Since I'm talking about old TV programs, how far back can some of you go? Can you remember Flip Wilson? He made that phrase, Geraldine, as he portrayed the woman. One made you, the devil made me do it. One day a little girl got mad at her younger brother and she pushed him down. She called him a name. And then she spat on him. Her father, who really wasn't a very good disciplinarian, came in and said, "Honey, I think the devil made you do that." She thought for a moment, and then she answered, "Dad, the devil may have made me push him down and call him names, but I thought of spitting on him all by myself." The devil made us do it? Really? What gets into us? Some would say our problem is behavior and attitude, and it's some chemical imbalance in the brain. And they have proof that that's the case. Mood changes. Because there are drugs on the market can counter all of that stuff. If you're depressed here, try this pill. You're hyperactive here. We got a pill for that too. We got a pill for everything. There was one man, his name was Jose Delgado, and he did some very interesting work. He was actually a Spanish neuroscientist. He was a professor at Yale University, and he did work with brain stimulus. And one of his more famous experiments was that he planted electrodes into the brain of a ferocious bull. The story claims that he went into a ring with the bull and he had the red cape bullfighters have, and he had a little transmitter. And as he waved the red cape and the bull began to claw on the ground and start charging for him, just at the last minute, he went click and the bull stopped. I did some research on that. Whether he actually climbed into a ring with a bull is maybe a stretch of the experiments that he did. But he did do experiments on a ferocious bull. And it began to arouse in a lot of scientists, what are the implications of our ability to stimulate the brain through some kind of technology? And that goes on today. But he proved that by stimulating a certain part of the brain, your entire disposition can be changed. As I thought about it, I said, wouldn't that be great? Have a little clicker in my hand. Someone in your family, some friend of yours gets really hostile, click. Maybe somebody at work, maybe somebody at school that wants to punch your elevator lights out, and as they get close to you, go click. Maybe it's a friend who wants to take a slice of tenderloin off your backside. Click. Unfortunately, life is rarely that simple. Our problems, personal problems, family problems, relatives, friends, usually very complex. Maybe you do have physical problems. A lot of us do. Go see a doctor. There are things they can do for that. Maybe you have mental problems. Go see a counselor. There are things they can do for that. But look around. There are a lot of examples of inappropriate behavior in the world in which we live. You can take your pick because they're all of them in the news every day, someplace, for some reason. Dishonesty? We talked about that just a second. How much lying is going on? Cheating, deceiving other people. Whether that's in personal relationships, whether that's in the workplace. How about disrespect? How many people are rude, dismissive, insulting, disrespecting personal boundaries, ignoring consent, doing things they ought not do? How about discrimination? Boy, that's in the news, isn't it? Over race or ethnicity or gender or sexual orientation, over religion, over your disability. How about bullying? All our kids face that. All the schools. Intimidating somebody. Intent to harm them physically, emotionally, socially. Or broaden that to adults, even harassment, sexual harassment. That's surely a big thing. Manipulation. Some people are just out to manipulate other people, influence them for their own personal gain. People want to invade your privacy, do something without your consent, spy on you, get into your private information, spread it abroad. How about substance abuse? It's sold on every street corner, probably here in this town. Consumption of alcohol or drugs, leading to negative consequences to oneself and to other people. And that might lead to violence. That's there. That's in the news. And criminal behavior, surely. We've got a policeman in here. Tell you all about it. All of these inappropriate things. What gets into people? Call it what you want to call it. I think maybe we could call it unclean spirits. And they are affecting our godly lives. And we need them removed. And only Jesus Christ can do that. Let's learn this morning from what we read at the beginning over in the Gospel of Mark. Maybe at least three short thoughts. First is this. If you go back to Mark chapter 1, verse 24, though Mark doesn't give the specifics of what the symptoms are or what the problem is with the person that's there, when Jesus approaches, they say, "Let us alone. What have we to do with you, Jesus of Nazareth? Did you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." And then in verse 25, Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be quiet and come out from him. Whatever had gotten into him needs to come out of him. Whatever has gotten into us needs to come out of us." And the first thing we can see from what we read this morning in Mark chapter 1 is the authority of Jesus. You could read all about Jesus throughout the gospel message. What were people impressed about Jesus? They said in Matthew 7:29 that he taught as one with authority. And here in Mark, it talks about the authority of Jesus. What is authority? We know people who speak with authority. There's just something about their demeanor, something in their tone of voice, something that inspires action. Man went to his doctor. He had a headache. He walks into the doctor's office. There was a large business-like nurse sitting behind the receptionist's desk, and he said, "I'd like to see the doctor. I have a headache." She didn't even look up, but she said very sharply, "Go into that room, close the door, and take off your clothes." But man, go into that room, close the door, and take off your clothes. So what do you think he did? He went into the room, he closed the door, and he took off his clothes. And then suddenly he realized there was another person in the room. A man. And he also had his clothes off. So he said to the other man, "I can't believe that I'm standing here like this and all I've got is a headache." And the guy complained, "You think you've got problems? I just came into the office to deliver a package." Some people command that kind of authority. But Jesus' authority was of a different kind. Even the unclean spirits recognized the authority of Jesus. It came from his relationship with God. I guess you could say he had a divine authority. And when we have problems, I'm talking about serious problems, we seldom look to the authority, Jesus Christ, for answers. We listen to self. We listen to friends. We may listen to our spouse or our family or our relatives, and sometimes that's perfectly okay. And sometimes we get bad advice. But the only possibility of really cleaning up your life is to be found in listening to Christ, because Jesus had divine authority. Hear him about your problem. Second thought this morning. This story impresses upon us the fact that there is always a possibility out of your problem. Jesus delivered the unclean spirit from the guy. And the same authority can deliver unclean spirits from you and from I this morning. And I don't think too many of us really think that Jesus and his word can help us in day-to-day problems. We give lip service to our faith. We love to look at this. But we really fail to trust him. There's an old story, and it's about some linemen who were setting telephone poles out in the middle of a farmer's field. And the farmer looked out from his window, climbed up on through his porch, went out and confronted the people and said, "Get off of my land." And they reached down and they brought out a piece of paper and said, "Here, we have a piece of paper that says we can put lines anywhere we want across your field." So the farmer walked back towards his fence. And there was another bull. Maybe it was Delgado's bull. So all the linemen came running towards them. The old farmer climbed up on the fence post and he hollered out to them, "Show him your papers! Show him your papers! Show him your papers!" To many, the authority of Jesus is only a paper authority. We read the book for inspiration. But when our life's all messed up, we don't believe Jesus can help us. We don't believe Jesus can put our marriage back together when it's on the rocks. We don't believe that the authority of Jesus can heal an addiction that we may have or change a character flaw within us. We don't believe that the authority of Jesus has any answers to the sin in our lives. Maybe 2,000 years ago he had authority and stories like this and the unclean spirits, but not today. You want your life to be different? I think many of us do. Christ wants you to have life. In fact, he says, "I want you to have life. I want you to have more abundant life. I want you to be healthy and righteous and have a happy life." And I think deep down we all long for that kind of peace and purpose. But some of us disguise that. We love to walk through the snow until we freeze to death. And others seek out help and answers in all of the wrong places. What did Jesus say in Matthew 11:28? "Come unto me, all ye who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." That's pretty to the point, isn't it? Come to Jesus. He alone can deliver you from what is unclean or wrong in your life. Third thought, final thought. Surrender is essential. God made us unique. We are free moral agents. We can choose how we want to live. And in fact, choose we must. If we want the healing of Christ, we've got to open ourselves to the Spirit of Christ. Kind of like a game of chess here with checks and checkmates, and it's our move first. How we move determines the next move life makes. But if we yield to Jesus, if we yield to his authority, then our moves will be in the right direction and produce results. That sounds so simple. And yet I know that's so hard. We always are facing my will or thy will. We like to choose my will. I'm as older than most of you out here. So I've stood up here and I've been among you over many, many years and I have seen a lot. I've seen people in trouble. I've seen families in trouble. I've seen sin and mistakes and judgment. I've seen priorities in life that are all messed up. I've seen pain and hurt and suffering and hardship. I've seen successes and I've seen failures. And I've learned this much. Life will work out right only one way, and that's God's way. Outside of God's way, there's nothing but problems that you're going to face. Maybe that's why Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." That was over in John 14:6. And whether we like to admit it or not, Jesus did mean it just as he said it. He has been right all along. Only his way will work. So I don't know what gets into people, but I know how to get it out. Christ can get it out. This morning we're going to sing the song of invitation. I invite you to come. You need to join Christ. He says, "Come to me through faith, through repentance of your sin, through confessing that you believe that Jesus is the Christ, by being immersed to wash away those sins, clean the blackboard, whiteboard today. Rise and walk as a new creature. Come if you will, if you stand up.